This is the Middle East Monitor Podcast from the Voice of America. I'm Paul Westfeeling in the VOA News Center in Washington. John Kerry leaves Washington this weekend on his first trip as Secretary of State. Where he will go, what he will do, and why he won't be visiting Israel. That's coming up. The Arab League meets to discuss the situation in Syria. I'll talk to our reporter in Cairo on what, if anything, was decided. And we will report this Friday on an historic development in U.S.-Iranian relations, an agreement to keep the sport of wrestling in the Olympics. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry leaves Sunday for Europe and the Middle East, his first trip abroad as America's top diplomat. With Syria's civil war rocking Damascus suburbs, Secretary Kerry's schedule in Europe and the Middle East includes meetings with opponents of the Bashar al-Assad regime. I asked our State Department correspondent Scott Stearns about the trip, and he told me Secretary Kerry is no stranger to Syria.
There are really sort of two parts of this trip, the Europe part and the Middle East part. He'll go to London, Paris, Berlin, Rome, and Ankara, largely to meet with some of the informal Friends of Syria group who continue to support opponents of President Bashar al-Assad. But perhaps most importantly, in Berlin, he'll be meeting with the Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov. Russia and China, of course, have been some of the stumbling blocks in tougher United Nations action against the Assad government in three times now, vetoing resolutions that would have linked calls for political engagement to binding sanctions that might actually have some impact on President Assad if he agreed to a political timetable and then went back on it.
We know what Hillary Clinton was like, 4 years as Secretary of State. What can you tell us about John Kerry, the man? Is there a lot known about his policies? Is he going to change anything? Is he going to go down a different path?
The Secretary of State always reflects the president. So the fact that Hillary Clinton and John Kerry are serving the same president speaks to what I think will be the overall continuity in U.S. foreign policy. That said, Secretary Kerry is far more interested in Europe than I think President Obama or Secretary Clinton. He's a French speaker. He lived as a boy in Berlin. It is not inconsequential that he is making his first trip to Europe, whereas Secretary Clinton made her first trip as Secretary of State to Asia, reflecting the importance that the Obama administration was then putting on the so-called Asia pivot. Specifically on Syria, you may find more engagement from Secretary Kerry, especially in the detail of trying to work out a deal. He has met in the past many times with President Bashar al-Assad. He reflected in his confirmation hearing a conversation that he had with President Assad, reflecting the president's awareness of the threat of a young population of unemployed Syrians, the need to deal with some of the issues, some of the calls for greater political room to maneuver. Then Senator Kerry says that he felt that President Assad was looking to reach out to the West and find some sort of accommodation, though, as he said, history has now passed. And that's moot because President Assad has made a series of decisions that make that no longer applicable.
We're going to hear from our correspondent in Cairo in just a few moments about the just-concluded Syrian talks, the Arab League talks in Cairo. But I want to find out, you say that maybe Syria would want to reach out and hold a dialogue to this day, or is that pretty much gone by the wayside?
No, this was Senator Kerry reflecting on a conversation that he had with President Assad in the past. Clearly, the mindset of President Assad after this conflict has gone on as long as it has, and he has more or less rejected out of hand any overtures that might include his leaving power, his thinking clearly about his country and his place in his country may be far different than it was when he met some time ago with Senator Kerry. That's to say, however, that as Secretary of State, Mr. Kerry brings to the Syrian conflict perhaps a more personal knowledge of the Assad government and those involved in it.
He's going to the Middle East, but he's not going to Israel.
Correct.
Why?
Any reason? Yes. He's going to Riyadh, Abu Dhabi, and Doha. A lot of that is Syria-related. A lot of that is so-called Arab Spring-related. Mm-hmm. State Department officials say that preliminary plans to go to Jerusalem and Ramallah ahead of President Obama's trip to the region were scrapped because Israeli politicians are still working out the levers of a coalition government. Mm-hmm. And the feeling was that it would not be an appropriate time to go. Not going to Jerusalem, then, you're not going to go to Ramallah. Mm-hmm. So Secretary Kerry will accompany the president on his trip to the Middle East, but will not be visiting Jerusalem and Ramallah ahead of that.
About that Arab League meeting in Cairo, during which Syria topped the agenda, our reporter in Cairo, Edward Uranian, told me there was a lot of talk but little action to come out of the two-day get-together.
The Syrian opposition is very fractured, and everyone has sort of his own point of view. They've rarely been able to agree on much of anything, although they do seem to be towing the line in terms of going along with their leaders, the new leader, declaration that he's willing to talk to the government of President Bashar al-Assad. Of course, they're saying that they need to have an interlocutor who is clean and doesn't have blood on his hands. Yesterday, what they said, which was probably the headline news, was that they wanted talks to be under the aegis of both the U.S. and Russia. Up until now, Russia has been making most of the noises in terms of negotiating. The Russians had a conference in Moscow several days ago. They brought together the Egyptian foreign minister, the Lebanese foreign minister, and the Russian foreign minister. And they said they were going to try to jumpstart negotiations towards a transitional government. The actual developments in terms of negotiations are rather sparse because Syrian foreign minister is not due into Moscow until Monday, and the opposition leader, Syrian opposition leader Muaz al-Khatib, is not apparently going to be in Moscow for another couple of weeks. Now, mm-hmm. That's not entirely clear, but it seems like they've deliberately tried not to come at the same time.
While these talks are going on, have the Syrians, first of all, have the Syrians sent anybody to represent them? And number two, has there been any reaction from the Syrian government?
The Syrian government is no longer represented at the Arab League since they were taken out. Their seat was taken away from them last year, over a year ago. So they are not allowed to have anyone here, although I assume they still actually do have people present in the Syrian, the Egyptian capital, Cairo. But the Arab League does not officially recognize the Syrian government of Bashar al-Assad anymore. And in terms of the Syrian government actually sitting down and negotiating, well, there was sort of a discussion between the Syrian government Minister of Reconciliation and the Information Minister, both of whom were saying different things. The Reconciliation Minister, Ali Haidar, is a personal friend of Bashar al-Assad, and he said initially that he was willing to go to a European capital to meet with the opposition leader or any opposition leader. And then he was called to order by the information minister. One assumes that was Bashar al-Assad himself who called him to order, who said that the talks need to take place in Damascus. And that, up until now, is the last position of the Syrian government, that talks can only take place in Damascus. Now, the information minister, Amran Zabi, gave a press conference about 3-4 days ago, and he said that the opposition was welcome in Damascus. They can come back to the capital. They will not be arrested, and that's where the talks, according to the Syrian government version of reconciliation talks, will take place. Of course, that's a non-starter with the opposition, so I don't think anyone seriously thinks that that's going to go anywhere.
It looks like these talks in Cairo were meant to draw up a wish list of things they would like to see happen, but so far it's only a wish list. There's been no concrete action to follow through.
Most of the Syria conferences up until now, both here in Cairo and under the aegis of the Arab League and the Friends of Syria conferences that have taken place in Europe, in Morocco, in Turkey, over the months, have drawn up wish lists, and they've rarely been fulfilled. Even the Qatar meetings of the Syrian opposition, where money was supposed to be raised for the Syrian opposition, according to many Syrian opposition activists, that money that has been pledged by various governments has never really come through. Of course, each government acts differently, separately, so it's difficult to say what percentage of the money that was pledged came through. But according to the opposition activists, much of that money never did come through. So it is really a wish list.
That is reporter Edward Uranian in Cairo. Also coming out of Cairo is word that Egyptian President Mohamed Morsi has called for parliamentary elections starting on April 27th. The voting will take place in four stages across a country deeply divided between the Islamist Muslim Brotherhood Party that has ruled since the ouster of former President Mubarak and the more secularist opposition. The voting will end in late June with a new parliament scheduled to hold its first meeting on July 6. It will be Egypt's first election since an Islamist-backed constitution was adopted in December. Critics say that constitution, which was drafted without opposition input and approved in a hastily organized referendum, fails to provide adequate human rights protections and fails to curb the power of the military establishment. Voters heading to the polls in the East African nation of Djibouti today, where opposition candidates are taking part in parliamentary elections for the first time in 10 years, no opposition lawmakers have been elected in the tiny North African country since the independence from Djibouti from France in 1977. That could change, though, with Friday's vote, which will feature candidates from three parties competing for 65 seats. About 200,000 people are eligible to vote at 480 polling stations across the country. More than 60 international observers will be monitoring the election. Go to our website, voanews.com, 24/7, for updates on these and the rest of the hour's top stories. It is the second annual VOA Photo Contest. The theme this year is Share Your Life Through Photography. Here's what you need to do. Upload your digital image to voanews.com/iPad and mention me, Paul, on your entry form, and I'll mention your name on International Edition. Your chance to win an iPad. voanews.com/iPad. That's the place to go for more information. And the contest ends on the 1st of March. The United States and Iran rarely agree on much, but now sports officials in both countries are going to the mat, so to speak, to try to save wrestling as an Olympic sport. VOA's Jeff Selden has more.
World Championship Wrestling in Tehran, pitting the United States against Iran. But the match is about more than victory for one side or the other. For the wrestlers and their coaches, it's the start of a shared struggle.
I would like to invite you to New York City on May 16th.
I would like to visit New York City.
The reason for the U.S. invitation for a show of solidarity with Iran? The International Olympic Committee's announcement this month that it plans to drop wrestling as an Olympic sport for the 2020 Summer Games. It's a decision that was greeted with dismay in wrestling-crazy Iran and by fans and officials in the U.S. So, when the U.S. team arrived in Tehran this week for the World Championships, Mitch Hull with the U.S. national team says the solution seems simple. Work together.
Politically, we're not always on the same page with Iran or politically with Russia, but in wrestling, there's no doubt that we're all together in this effort, and we consider Iran one of our strongest allies in the sport of wrestling.
For now, officials and wrestlers from both countries are optimistic this partnership can save wrestling's place in the Olympic Games, where it now must beat out seven other sports for entry in the 2020 Olympics.
We have great confidence that we can work with the Iranian Wrestling Federation, the Iranian wrestlers, and really the Iranian people to show the world that no matter what's happening politically, we have the same goal and the same belief and passion about the sport of wrestling.
The U.S. and Iran grappling together to save the sport they love. Jeff Selden, VOA News.
Thanks for listening, everyone. I'm Paul Westfeeling in Washington. More news and information on our website, MiddleEastVoices.com. That's MiddleEastVoices.com.